Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
They could have said it needs to go back to the spot. But how about some explanation? Like, I think part of what gives this oxygen is the fact that they just sit there and go, there's no conspiracy, nothing to see here. And then when you ask them questions, they go, shut up. Well, that just drives people insane.
I still don't understand how the two judges could be so far off.
They were like a yard and a half apart.
Yeah.
Because
the dude coming in from the near side was clearly a first down, and the far side ref from our television vantage point was, you know, on the other. I still don't understand.
And like that's the other thing. I think the line judge that gave him the first down, I think he gave it to him too. Like, because he was well past the 39. I think when you saw the replay, because that was the other thing, they had pylon cam, so you know there's not a perspective issue. Josh clearly gets to the 40, which is what he needed to get to, and you even have Sterator going, I think he's got it by at least a third of the football. And everyone that's watching it's sitting there going, seeing the same angle, and it didn't feel outrageous. But I also think this is true. I think if they would have stuck with the other line judge's spot, I think they were going to confirm it. I think whatever they saw, they were just going to go with because they thought it was a close play. And that's why what I didn't get was, why didn't we get the explanation? Now, I'm also taking the other side on this one. How many times did they think the quarterback sneak was going to work and then get stuffed?
Why does Josh Allen suck so much at quarterback sneaks?
Because he doesn't tush-push.
Is he too big?
No. A, they don't do it right.
That's true, they don't.
The Eagles put two basically offensive linemen, and then Jalen picks a side, and they push with all their might. It's like 800 pounds behind him. What Josh has done is Josh goes to where Deion Dawkins is, and so his is truly just like a quarterback sneak. It's not a tush-push. Well, if anyone that watches the Bills knows that he goes to the left side on the sneak. Turns out the Chiefs knew it too. And what I didn't get was, okay, they stopped it a couple of times. Why not just run the same play that's worked in what the Chiefs did? Play action pass, the fullback or whoever is that your H-back's going to be wide open in the flat, or Josh can run it. And why were they not doing that? Because it was a free 20 yards every time.
Yeah, it is. But back to your original question. as someone who grew up in the, you know, mid-Atlantic and went to plenty of college with many of people from the Philadelphia area and are just the most annoying fans to be around. Maybe not of all. There's a lot of annoying fan bases.
They're certainly one of the most aggressive.
I find myself, I think I'm cheering for the Eagles. And I don't know if that's because I'm probably going to bet the Eagles, but I'm not an anti, I don't hate the Chiefs.
I respect the Chiefs. I do find them boring. I will say this. I can't get there because, you know, when everyone's giving all the Giants fans crap all year about Saquon, I largely just kind of ignored it, dusted it off. The first time it truly hit me in the feels was not the 70-yard runner. It was the second touchdown when Saquon set up all the defense. He sucked them in by kind of like jab stepping to the middle and then bouncing it out wide and nobody could catch him. And then he did his little touchdown flip. That one hurt. It's like I've seen that play, I don't know, 50, 60 times. And that was the first time I was like, this sucks. Like I had Kelly Clarkson playing in the background. Like, you know, it was a tough scene.
You're not pulling for your guy Saquon to get a title?
I did appreciate how he did say, man, the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, I wasn't pulled for him. I did appreciate that, at least. Like,
it's true.
I mean, in the end, it's where the Giants making their decision let Saquon do whatever he needed to do. But it's just like, man, could you go anywhere but there? Anywhere but there. Ugh. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's get into the NBA with the Grizzlies. Grizzlies knock off the Spurs last night. They've now won 9 of 11, 6 straight at home. Tim and I are going to discuss whether or not we believe in the Grizzlies at the highest level. We clearly know they're a good basketball team. We're going to talk about whether or not we believe in them. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Valentine's Day is coming up, and if you're thinking about getting something special for that special person in your life, head on over to go see our friends at Robert Irwin Jewelers because they got the perfect Valentine's Day trifecta for you. Shop now through Valentine's Day at Robert Irwin Jewelers and get a dozen fresh roses and a box of chocolates free with your purchase of $99 or more. You can pick them up with your voucher between February 11th and 14th, but it's only while supplies last. If you're thinking about some options, check out the Diamond Essentials Collection. It's a classic collection of crafted diamond solitaire earrings, pendants, and bracelets featuring perfectly matched diamonds with excellent proportions to ensure you get a bigger and brighter sparkle. Prices start at just $5.99. They also have one of the hottest items out there right now, the 2-carat lab-grown diamond tennis bracelet. You can get yours for $7.99, but hurry in and shop early because it's only for a limited time while supplies last. Also, if you're thinking about getting engaged, congratulations. Do what I did. Go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. Get your engagement ring there. You can check out all of their already crafted selections, or you can do what I did, which is get a custom-made engagement ring. I came in with a couple of pictures and designs that my wife liked. We picked the center diamond. We came in under budget, and we had one of the best shopping experiences you could possibly have. Again, free with your purchase of $99 or more, a dozen fresh roses, and a box of chocolates. They also have great financing options like 12 months interest-free financing, or you can take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Shop early for the best selection, bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Let's get in the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, Tim, I don't know if it was up on one of the video boards last night at Circa, but the Grizzlies knock off the Spurs 128-109, capping off a 2-0 back-to-back that started in Milwaukee. Big fourth quarter by Jaren Jackson Jr., 16 points to propel the Grizzlies over the Bucks. And then last night, it was the return of Ja Morant to the lineup, and Morant found that early season form that we've kind of been searching for, gives the Grizzlies 25.
I think
it was 25 and 11. Yes, 25 points and 11. He did have 4 turnovers. All those came basically like in the first quarter. After that, he was just phenomenal in complete control. Even went 4 of 6 from 3. This, though, is the question that I think everyone is pondering here with the Grizzlies. And maybe the right answer is shut up, who cares, enjoy the ride. Like, winning is not easy. It doesn't you know, it doesn't happen to everyone. Enjoy it while it happens. But I think one of the key questions that a lot of fans are asking is, okay, we know this team's good, regular season good, but how high should we get our hopes? And I'll make both cases for you. I'll start with the positive case. This team has the fourth best record in the NBA. There's no denying that. They also have the fourth best point differential in the NBA. They have a top 15 player, top 10 player in Ja Morant. Probably at this point, we're now getting to realize, like, Jaren Jackson Jr. saying he's a top 20 player is not inciting a riot. The guy's been awesome this entire year, and he's deservedly an all-star. Honestly, there's a case to be made that he should be an all-star starter. And then on top of that, you bring it in with Desmond Bane, even though he is hurt. The Grizzlies found out, though, rather than an ankle sprain, it was a foot sprain. They seem to believe that that was a positive, that the ankle sprain could be a tougher injury than a foot sprain. So they were cautiously optimistic about that. They now have the return of G.G. Jackson to the lineup, which brings athleticism, length, and truly like high ceiling guy on the perimeter. They've upgraded Marcus Smart and Vince Williams Jr. to doubtful, which means that they're expected to be back perhaps this week, perhaps as early as Toronto on Wednesday. They have remarkable depth, and they have one of the best offenses in the league that pairs with a top seven-ish defense, and that's the hallmark of a good team. Is that a fair case to be made?
Yes.
Okay.
Should I expand or should I? You're rolling, so I'm just going to let you go.
Here would be the counter argument. All those things are true, but they largely beat up on really bad teams. When you look at their record against teams 500 and above, they're basically 14-13. They've beaten up on the East. They have really struggled against physical teams. And in the playoffs, when the game gets very physical, that's still going to be a problem for them. And further, they still are not a tremendous shooting team. And in the playoffs, when the game shortens and it oftentimes becomes who gets it, who can hit a tough shot, they still don't have that.
I would say from afar, that would be my concern is when I look at this roster. I think depth has really become to be such a massive piece moving forward. You know, we've kind of gone away from the big three era to who can you have coming off the bench and making some big plays. That all being said, my worry would be in a seven-game series, is there a guy, and maybe it's Ja, who can just take things over? You know, we were talking so much about the Western Conference Finals a year ago and Luka and the way that he's played, and we've seen this from superstars before, but I look at the West, man, and like, now Oklahoma City's got SGA, who's going to win MVP, but there's no team that is really setting itself apart.
Yeah, there's so the Grizzlies are sitting at second in the West. They're six games behind the Thunder. They're unlikely to catch them with math at this point. They're separated by a game and a half with Houston. They have to finish a full game ahead of Houston because Houston has the season series. And then basically within five games, you have 11 through four.
Right. And I don't think the depth of Los Angeles, even though they've got Luka, they've got LeBron, I don't think the depth of Los Angeles really worries me.
And I'll honestly, that's the other thing that I should probably celebrate about the AD trade. That definitely to me makes the Lakers less scary. Now, Luka's always given the Grizzlies problems because they don't really have a guy that guards him all that well. But without someone in the middle...
Right, when you think back to 2 years ago, yep. And I know that was a banged-up Grizzlies team, obviously, with all the injuries, but they just bullied the hell out of them,
absolutely,
right, in that whole series. And I don't know, depending on what they do, and Pelinka did make mention that they're going to be in the market, as many other teams are, for a big, but who is that big going to be? Is that going to be an game-changing type of big. Like, now you guys know Valanciunas. If it's Valanciunas, okay.
I'll say this. I think the Grizzlies would welcome that. Now, Jonas was beloved here because he basically came right after Mark, and there was always this frustration. We're a simple city. We like our bigs to get points and rebounds, and Jonas gets points and rebounds, whereas Mark didn't, but Mark could stay on the floor. I don't think Jonas would scare the Grizzlies. AD scares the Grizzlies.
Yeah, and AD scares a lot of people, a lot of teams, right?
Basically everyone but Denver.
I mean, here's the thing, man. It's just like, and we're going to get more in-depth and as we get closer, but like right now, and I know the play-in has to unfold, but like Minnesota in the first round would be the matchup currently. Facing a guy like Ant, who could take things over. That's scary, but could they beat him? Absolutely.
Well, that's the other thing that's interesting about...
Like, the first-round matchup could be pretty scary. Like, I'll tell you what, man. If Kawhi keeps playing and getting healthy, and this defense in Los Angeles plays the way that it is, like, the Clippers are going to be a pain in the butt.
So, this is the thing. The Clippers scare me more than the Timberwolves, because I don't really have a great explanation other than we've just seen it in sports. The Timberwolves have a mental block against the Grizzlies. Like, we saw it in that first-round matchup a few years ago where basically the Timberwolves led 70% of the series and they got beaten six. Like, and this year, like, they've had multiple games where they should clearly have won the game. They have an inability to close out the Grizzlies. Like, they just look under their bed and they see the Grizzlies every night. Now, the Clippers scare me because the Clippers get very physical with them, and even when the Clippers have maybe not had the best team on the floor, they've just presented problems for the Grizzlies. Pace gets them, their defensive strategy gets them. Like, I think that's a worse matchup for the Grizzlies. To me, the Clippers are kind of the same problems that the Rockets give the Grizzlies, the Clippers give the Grizzlies.
Is there a... If it's the Lakers, I mean that's the crazy thing too, is like, is there a mental block there with LeBron?
I think the mental block was more with AD, and that's kind of the question that I have, is does the AD thing transfer to Dallas? Now, the problem with LeBron and Luka on the same floor is, okay, the same guy that you would probably use to guard LeBron, you would use to guard Luka. And I guess this is something else I should probably throw out as a cause for concern. Jalen Wells has been outstanding. Like, it's entirely possible he's going to win Rookie of the Year. Zach Edey has had ups and downs, but he's starting to play more consistently. The Grizzlies are going, unless the roster changes here in the next 48 hours, the Grizzlies are going to be going into a playoff series with two rookies in their top eight rotation. I can't think of another good team that even has one. I mean, I guess you could say the Lakers with Connect.
Yeah. I was trying to think of some. Not really this year, right? Because the Sixers and what's his name's hurt? McCain's hurt. Yeah. Is he done for the year?
I thought so, but...
Whatever. I mean, the Sixers aren't even good either. So, but yeah, I think your point is certainly valid there.
I think kind of where I net out is, I don't even know if it's really something to consider, because I think that the playoff is going to be a lot like we see in college basketball. I think it's just going to be matchup dependent. Like, think about last year. We were convinced that it was a passing of the torch when the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets in the fashion they did. It was just a crowning of the Timberwolves. They turned right back around. Luka was a tough matchup for them, and they get beaten five. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just kind of think, if you go up against a team, I think what the Grizzlies don't want to see is teams that are big and physical on the perimeter, because that has given them problems, because then their athleticism gets exposed a little bit. But I think the other flip side of this is, if Ja can remain healthy, it's entirely possible that if Ja remains healthy and Jaren remains healthy, in just about most series they're going to play, they're going to have two of the best players on the floor at all times.
I think that's more than fair.
All right. Let's see. I want to get into Tom Brady. All right. So this might be something that only you and I care about, but I do find this interesting. This, according to Pro Football Talk, the rules the NFL put in place to deal with Tom Brady's status as both an owner and the Raiders and a broadcaster for Fox Sports will be tweaked this week. Brady, who is set to call Super Bowl 59 with Kevin Burkhardt, is typically barred from team facilities, practices, and production meetings heading into the games because of his stake in the Raiders. Chiefs owner Clark Hunt said that the production meeting portion of that edict will be dropped heading into this weekend's game. When Brady was approved as an owner of the Raiders, there were a lot of discussions internally that ended up being the recommendation of the league office that it didn't make sense to have him in the production meetings. That's where the rule came from. Since he's doing the game this week, we have no issue with him being in our production meetings. He'll have the access that any broadcaster would have. The reason why I bring this up is interesting is people that I trust that are media critics, and I actually say that affectionately, people that I truly respect their opinion, they believe one of the biggest issues that Brady has is that he is not allowed into the production meetings, because you would not believe how much of those meetings dictates how the broadcast goes. Are we going to feel better about Tom Brady, the broadcaster, after Super Bowl 59?
Because he'll be in the meetings?
Correct. And we'll realize, like, oh, if he'd just be in these meetings, it would be different.
But he's not going to be moving forward, right? Is it
so
just the
you want to put the tinfoil hat on with me?
Let's do it.
I would like to know who made the initial contact for this decision. But I got to believe if media critics believe this, Fox believes this to be the case too. And you could talk me into this being the first step of, all right, this is the trial run. And listen, we don't believe that Tom Brady's going to these production meetings trying to get state secrets. We believe that he's trying to do this to get the best broadcast, period. Does this begin to grease the wheels of that?
I mean, I don't know how you have your cake and eat it too here with this whole situation, where he's going to be a decision maker for an NFL franchise potentially, and then still broadcast the games and get information regarding. The Super Bowl seems like the one-off you're willing to do it because it's the last game of the season, right? Is there any information that he's going to unearth in these meetings?
I think it's also important to note he's not going to either team facility. You know what I mean? Like he's not visiting the teams. He's not going to practice. Like he's just doing the production meetings that are in New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel? I guess this is what I would say. How do you feel about it? Because the way that I have viewed it is I just view him kind of like generic broadcaster. I don't take the stance that he's been bad. I don't take the stance that, people are hating on him. He's really better. I've seen glimpses where I'm like, oh, that's good stuff. Like I specifically can think of in the NFC divisional game when he pointed out that the Lions had 12 on the field. They needed a timeout. They needed a timeout before anyone else recognized it, including the Lions. Like I thought that was good insight. I've been a little disappointed on kind of the quarterback analysis because I think part of what makes Tom Brady interesting is, hey, if you're the greatest to ever do this, like, what are you seeing? But my general view is he just feels like the world's most expensive generic analyst.
Maybe I'm too critical, but like, there's been nothing.
He doesn't have a big game voice either. I'll say that.
Yeah, he's not. I'm trying to think. Like, I still think Aikman's the best.
No, I think you know what the last few years have really showed me. We don't give him enough credit because, and maybe for a while it was like cowboy fatigue and animosity. I also really kind of enjoy this stage Aikman because he's got a little bit of edge to him in that, you know, this is a quarterback that's even saying, oh, come on some of these hits. And what I really think he doesn't get credit for is his ability to communicate probably something that is fairly complicated quickly and in few words, I think has been understated. I also think, like, when you look across the other booths and you realize, like, Romo, Collinsworth, it just feels like he's a shill for the NFL. And then you've got Brady, and Brady at best is work in progress. But, like, to your point, like, how can he keep doing all of this and still maximize? It's just made me really appreciate Aikman more and more.
Who's your favorite analyst?
Of all time?
No, not of all time, currently. And I'll say NFL or college.
Okay.
I think mine's McElroy.
I'm not the world's biggest Greg fan.
I think he's really good.
Okay, I'm going to have to go through.
So, I know, I just threw this on you.
So on CBS, we've got Danielson.
Eh.
On NBC, we have Blackledge. I'm a Blackledge guy.
Or Jason Garrett and Notre Dame, baby.
The Clapper.
He's not terrible.
No, he's just...
He's not... He's fine.
Yeah, he's just kind of vanilla. I do have a soft spot for Blackledge because I'm an SEC kid growing up, and, like, Blackledge was the SEC on CBS. Like, if Blackledge and Vern were there, it was a big game. So there's that. Fox, we have Klatt. ESPN, ABC, we have Herbie. McElroy's number two, right?
Yep. Him and McDonough.
Who's paired with Tess? Jesse?
Jesse. Jesse's good.
Jesse, I think, is underrated.
Not his looks, though. Handsome fella.
Jesse also gets credit for me of, like, he actually had a chance to be, like, Eli's backup forever. Eli loved him. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go do The Bachelor. I know it's the end of my football career, but he's like, I got a better chance of making money for a longer period of time doing that than I do this. And so, and by the way,
I also give Jesse Palmer credit for this. And eventually he did be like, all right, I'm not going to do this anymore. That dude used to sit in studio for 14 hours and do the show with Joey Galloway.
Yeah.
And he did not have to because he had The Bachelor money and, like, someone that good looking should not be sitting in studio with Adnan Virk and Joey Galloway for 14 hours.
Yeah, but also studio lighting. Just saying, like, I like Cole Kublik.
Cole's very good.
I have
who, by the way, is Greg McElroy's radio co-host.
I have to also, I'm contractually.
But he's more of like a sideline analyst.
They kind of use, he's a hybrid. Even though he's on the sideline, he's mainly watching offensive line play. But he's
kind of got like the McShay old deal.
Luganville kind of does the same thing.
Yep.
I'm also contractually obligated on behalf
of. Kesnich kind of does that as well.
Yeah. On behalf of my wife, I the right family stance is we hate Jordan Rogers. also, that has nothing to do with his football takes. That has everything to do with she hated him on The Bachelor. I think I'm. This is the other thing I was trying to think of. Does this make sense to you? If Herb Street's on a college game, I'm cool with it. There's something about when my college guy is calling an NFL game that I can't quite believe in.
I'll hear your argument.
So
I also got Grumpy Al with them too, which
yeah, it doesn't help. And they don't have great chemistry. Olsen, I think, is very good. You know who's not bad? And you have to have Sunday Ticket to watch it because it's always like the 3:05 game. You're always watching like Raiders Cardinals. The Sanchez isn't actually bad.
Oh, I agree.
I'm going to say my favorite. I'm still going with Blackledge. There's something about Blackledge's voice. I don't know. I like Blackledge.
Blackledge is solid.
But yeah, maybe the right answer is Olsen.
And he's doing it with Burkhart?
Yeah.
No, Burkhart's the one. He's doing it with Joe Davis. Right?
Yes.
Baseball guy.
Yeah. He's gotten bumped to the number two. And I also kind of appreciate, like, he hasn't really given, like, the corporate line when he gets bumped out for Brady. He's like, it sucks. Like,
yeah.
I appreciate that.
I don't like it.
I guess that's the other question.
Brock Heward?
I like Brock fine. Brock's now, though, like, I feel like Brock's always on a FS1 game that I never have the sound on.
I'll say this, man. One of my favorite was Mayock. I love Mayock. I thought he was really good.
I liked Mayock. And honestly, you know who I really did like? I'll tell you what, man. This guy here. I call the guy the sheriff. Like, I don't know if you're a Barstool guy or not. The thing that he's doing with Portnoy on Sunday nights, it's outstanding internet television. I cannot recommend it enough. The shred line.
You know who's been getting a lot of run lately? And they were putting him on with Van Pelt was Dvorak.
Dusty has really been, and we as a radio
the
guy,
star
we
to, starting to shine. Yeah, man, I'm pro Dusty.
This probably won't be popular. You know, I think doesn't do a bad job. I don't hate Canell. In game,
so there's a couple people that I can't stand. Not personally, that I can't stand when they
their online presence.
Canell, who's kind of gotten better over the years. Like I'm accepting him more on that Cover 3 podcast. Like, I feel like he gets called out by the other three enough to kind of like, all right, temper it down there, buddy.
It helped having Bud. It helped adding Bud because while Bud's clearly a Florida State guy, he's way more open to being hypercritical of Florida State. It's kind of balanced it out.
But I'll give you three that I think were really good analysts. And Canell, I can take right now. Doug Gottlieb calling a game I thought was actually pretty good.
Listen, you're talking to somebody who used to listen to late night ESPN in his room every night on his Sharper Image radio. It was him and Bob Valvano for like
you
4 hours.
You and me and Bobby V.
And I'll tell you what, the takes were incredible.
I mean, I just love the fact that he flat out said, how hard can it be to coach Division I basketball and do a radio show? I'm not coaching 24 hours a day. For those who have not seen it, the current record for the Green Bay Phoenix is 2-22, and they've lost 19 games in a row.
I do feel obligated to mention this. Doug and Annie got divorced, so he probably just needed a second income.
And then Dan Dockage.
Yeah, I don't hate Dockage.
As an analyst?
Yeah.
Was fantastic.
I'll tell you.
Off the air doing some other stuff. It gets a little weird.
Who's our Dallas guy? Called Bruno Caboclo, who's 2 years away from being 2 years away. Now does like that. He called the Arizona Iowa State game that was brutal. Draft analyst as well. Lives in Dallas.
College football?
College basketball.
Oh, okay. Fran Fraschilla?
Yeah, Fran. I think Fran's good, too.
Oh, Fran's fantastic.
I like Fran.
I've also heard, and I have not met any of those four gentlemen I've spoken about, I've heard Fran Fraschilla is like the nicest person ever.
Fran Fraschilla one time did my show on Christmas Eve. No questions asked. So I was a fan before any of that happened. So I say that. I think that's kind of the other thing is like, is there anything in our business that gets more scrutiny and attention and probably impacts the game less?
The color analysts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever turn on a game and be like, well, I'm not watching it now, or I'm watching it because of, like, that was the thing too, when Romo was getting his $19 million or whatever. I think it's wildly overrated. A color analyst.
Yeah, I think in general, the only thing I've ever thought is, oh, like I do this with Harlan all the time because I think Harlan's the most criminally underrated broadcaster of our lifetimes. If Kevin's on the call and I didn't know it, I'm like, ooh, all right, now I'm in.
There certainly are times where I'll turn on a game and if someone's calling it, I'm like, I get a little bit more geeked up.
Right, but you and I weren't turning the game off.
No.
Like, a lot of people don't like Reggie Miller. I don't turn the game off. I just realize I'm going to be probably annoyed.
I think Sean Farnham's really good.
I think Sean's good as well. I think that's kind of the other thing is...
There's a lot of good analysts that you just don't know about because they don't get the shine that they probably deserve. But, you know, it's... I'll say this. It's kind of like when you turn on a mid-afternoon college football game and it's, I'll just use Cole Kubelik for example, you're like, wow, this is a nice enhancement to this game that I really want to watch. But maybe I'm in the minority. I've never been like, oh, this analyst's on click.
No, I think that's the way most people are. I think it got out of hand when the money started getting out of hand, and that's what started driving people insane. Like, I still think it's insane that Tony Romo has to work, 17-game schedule, and then, 3 playoff games, and then he gets bye weeks? Like, I find that insane.
I mean, Herb Street, I'll give him this, man. That dude doesn't get any bye weeks. Thursday night, flies to game day.
Private.
And then...
with his dog.
Does the game that night. Yeah, that's also a pet peeve of mine. And Herbie doesn't do it, thankfully. The on-air complaining of, like, lack of sleep or stuff like that. I'm like, I don't know, man.
By the way, how many rounds of golf do you play this week?
Right. Like, you're probably, and I'm not saying that Romo does it, but you hear it, and I'm just like, stop.
Well, no, this used to drive me insane. When Nance season would come rolling around.
Oh, when he would do the Super Bowl. No, it would be Final Four Championship into Masters.
Correct. And so it would go, people would do the math of, he's been calling 3 weeks of NCAA tournament, turning right around, and going and doing the Masters. And I was like, let me break this down for you. He calls 2 games on the first day of the tournament, off day, 2 more games, week off, 2 games, 1 game. So there's 7 games. Then he's calling another 3 games. No, they would only call 1 of the final 4 games. And so he's calling 2 games, 9 games, and then he calls 4 days at the Masters. It's like you total it up. It's like, yeah, in about a span of a month, he put in about a 10-hour work week.
I won't be that easy. I mean, prepping for broadcasts take a long, long time. But he's got all the resources at his disposal at CBS. They're going to make sure he looks good. He is a very good broadcaster, obviously. He takes pride in what he does.
I want to be very clear. I'm pro Nance. It just used to drive me insane when the conversation around Nance would be like, can you believe?
I'll say this, though. It wasn't him driving it.
No, right? That's fair.
When I hear people, whether it be whoever it may be, now, if it's a minor league broadcaster who's doing like 6 games in 6 days and, you know, traveling commercial
or I'll bus,
listen, I'll listen to your gripes.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to listen to a dude that's probably flying private or at worst first class, you know? It's like, yeah.
Well, maybe he had to go business. Yeah. Who knows? All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about the college hoop slates tonight. Let's find out what's on Tim's card. We'll come right back here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tuesdays means that Zen Sports is bringing the NBA Tuesday Spread Challenge promo bonus. Bet a minimum $5 spread bet on each of the seven NBA games tonight, and you could win a $1,000 bonus if you get them all correct. The first spread bet you place on each game will be the bet that counts towards the promotion. If there are multiple winners, the $1,000 prize will be split equally among all valid winners. Any other NBA spread bets made after your first qualifying NBA spread bet will not qualify for the promotion. Odds on the qualifying spread bet may not be less than minus 200 American odds. That means minus 199 does count, minus 201 will not. Any wagers deemed as wash betting by Zen Sports, regardless of whether either wager was made before the promotion, will not qualify for a prize as outlined above. After the bet is settled, a promotional bonus will be awarded to your Zen Sports account within 48 hours. This promotion cannot be combined with any other promotion, and all wagers are tracked in U.S. Central Time. If you got a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions do apply. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. All right, Tim, when you asked me what we were going to be doing on Sunday for the Super Bowl, the truth is it depends entirely how college basketball goes, because college basketball betting so far, it doesn't matter if I try to go sharp, if I try to go square. I cannot. It's just another Saturday of losers, and this Sunday I didn't have football to get me back. What's on the card tonight? Because we got to get back in. We got to be back in the saddle.
So I'll tell you a quick story about Saturday. So I didn't have a great day on Saturday. I'm with you.
Join the club.
This college hoop season has been challenging. I'm a big kind of, you know, anti-public, situational type of guy, and having Villanova on Saturday, for those who missed it, somehow Creighton got a timeout. Jumping out of bounds, they awarded them a timeout, and then they hit a corner three that they banked in. I don't know how that physically works, but such is life on that one. And then one of my best bets on Saturday was USC, who won outright. Hey, good winner. However, I was so beaten down as the day had gone on that when they started to lose their lead, because they were up like 21-6 or something like
that. Live bet the other side?
I'd live bet the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to middle it, and of course that did not play out all that well. And then lastly, on Sunday, I was able to hit a reverse jinx on social media, which made me feel great.
Always a big win.
So Illinois was playing poorly, and I just tweeted out, "Does Illinois suck?"
Yep, I had the same game.
Prompted the boys to get fired up. Problem was, I did have Illinois, but I also paired them with Oregon on a moneyline parlay, and the Ducks, they might suck because they got smoked by Nebraska.
Who was wearing practice jerseys.
At home. So, yeah, it's been a challenge. I took last night off. I needed to cleanse the stink and the stench. But I'm back at it today, baby. One game I don't know if it's square or not, coming up in about an hour and a half at the Garden, Johnny's and Marquette. Since Shaka has gotten to town in 2021, I made a vow anytime I saw a plus sign by Marquette, I was going to take it. And he's 22-13-3 against the spread as an underdog. However, it does feel like in recent years, it has not worked out all that well. So I think I'm gonna be on Marquette. Haven't gotten there yet. I do have a question. Let's get ugly. The ACC is terrible this year in college basketball. Terrible. Just gross. Notre Dame somehow lost to Miami on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was humanly possible. Mount St. Mary's beat Miami. Just pointing that out. Leonard Hamilton has been told your services will not be needed after this year. But he's going to coach the rest of the season. This is the first game since he has been told your services are no longer needed. Do we back the Seminoles on, I believe, a 4-game losing streak? They're terrible. Everyone in the ACC outside of Duke is terrible. Actually, Louisville's pretty good. 4-game losing streak for the Noles. At home tonight against Notre Dame, do they beat the Irish?
So my gut on this says I'm treating this as if I don't think I don't think there's a fired coach bump. I don't think there's one for the Gipper. I think everybody's trying to figure out where they're playing next year. I think there's also a chance that like, he's done. Then the school's gonna be like, we're not really gonna pay all this out. I think this could have disaster written all over it.
Certainly, is possible. I bet Florida State on the money line.
Scared money don't make money.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. We do have some really good games tonight. Kentucky, Mississippi, Kentucky, Ole Miss. Both of these teams. Kentucky, no more disappointing result than what we saw Saturday night at Rupp. And, like, I don't know how much you talked about it yesterday on the show, but Coach Cal was just in his bag.
Oh, it was like, I said it was like watching Picasso paint.
Like, when he ran
out, everything.
He ran off the floor. Alyssa Lang, who does a really good job, I'm a big fan of her work, she grabs him. They're in the tunnel. He's giving her an answer, and then he just starts yelling at his teammate in the middle of one of his answers. He's like, I gotta go. I'm like, that is just so classic Cal.
No, he was in his bag.
Oh.
All right, let's
People were leaving there, so.
Let's hit the music. For days, don't tell the story, tell your story. Let's go to Dennis Schroeder. When asked about the NBA trade deadline, he said, it's like modern slavery. It's modern slavery at the end of the day. Everybody can decide where you're going, even if you have a contract. Yeah, of course, we make a lot of money and can feed our families. But at the end of the day, if they say you're not coming to work tomorrow, you're going over there, they can decide that. They got to change that a little bit. Dennis Schroeder, I looked it up, career earnings, $103 million.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. All right, my man, look forward to talking to you on Friday.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about a football game.
Maybe a little bit of football on Friday. He, of course, is Tim Murray of VSiN. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For Dennis, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The game.